Hello to our INSS podcast listeners and viewers. My name is Michal Chatur-Rodoshitsky. I'm a research fellow at INSS. And with me today, joining us from Boston in the United States, is Mr. Jay Ruderman, president of the Ruderman Family Foundation. Among the many things that the Ruderman Foundation does during these days, specifically in the COVID-19 pandemic, we've been hearing a very vocal voice from the Ruderman Foundation regarding the need to use the crisis as an opportunity to reshape Israel's relationship with the American Jewish community. So on that note, Jay, a couple of things I want to ask you, but before we start to speak maybe about the relationship between Israel and the Jewish community, let's try and understand from you how this pandemic has shaped or has impacted Jewish communities in the United States. Now, of course, when we speak about COVID-19, we speak about economic hardships, we speak about lockdowns, about social kind of isolation. I think everyone is experiencing that. But maybe two things that I've noticed that are unique to the way that the Jewish community is dealing with this pandemic, or the hardships, additional hardships maybe that the Jewish community has, is first of all, high rates of infection and mortality. I think that in comparison to the general population, we see that Jewish communities are more impacted in that respect. And the second is anti-Semitism. And here again, we see that there is a spread of conspiracy theories about malicious Jewish intentions of spreading the virus to control the world and whatnot. So my first question would be, is this reflective? My understanding, is this reflective of what you're seeing on the ground? And if so, how are Jewish communities across the United States dealing with these particular unique characteristics or impacts on the Jewish community?
Well, first of all, thank you for inviting me to be part of the podcast. I'm honored. We in Boston are in the middle of the surge. This is a difficult time in Boston. I checked this morning, we've lost 3,405 citizens in Massachusetts. The United States has lost 61,808 people as of this morning. And the surge is continuing. Most of, I would say half of the cases have been in New York, New Jersey, the metro New York area. Massachusetts is another hot spot. But to answer your question, I heard a statistics the other day that half of the deaths in this country have come from nursing homes and segregated living facilities where people are living in close quarters. And the disease has spread like wildfire through these communities. Some of these communities are, some of these nursing homes are Jewish-run nursing homes with the majority of residents being Jewish. And I think that you will see in the future investigations as to how these private institutions are being run. Did they have the appropriate personal protective equipment? Were their regulations being followed according to the state? I'm not sure the states or the federal government was prepared for a pandemic, but I think that that's where you're seeing a lot of losses. Also, you know, where you see very, very densely populated areas where people are living very closely together, that's where you're seeing a lot of cases. Not only, like for example, in New York, in Brooklyn, in parts of Brooklyn where people live very, very close together and socialize, and the religious community and the cultural community is that they're very close with each other. You've seen a spike in cases. Also, like for example, in Massachusetts, Hispanic communities that are living in very close quarters, you've seen a spike. Someone said half of the beds in Massachusetts in the hospitals are filled with people of Hispanic origin.
So what you're saying actually is that, firstly, we understand, right, the Jewish community is a tight-knit community. We can see it in in religious rituals, in burial rituals and so forth. So that perhaps explains, just like the Hispanic community or other communities, that will have a higher rate of infection and mortality. But I do want to concentrate with you on the second factor then of anti-Semitism, because from what I've heard, and this is really interesting for us here to receive your take on this, is two kind of approaches. The one says that, you know, this is really, we're really seeing anti-Semitism spike here. We've seen reports about it, that we're seeing more and more people who are feeling less restrained to express their anti-Semitic views online, maybe because a lot of the action has moved from offline to the online world. Then there's also less barriers, or, you know, you feel anti-Semitism is more imminent. It's in your home, it's in your living room. Things that you perhaps weren't exposed to before also have a longer shelf life. So if someone posts an anti-Semitic post, it stays around for a few days and a lot more people can witness it than if you're actually walking in the street and there's an anti-Semitic act done then and there. So that's one kind of approach. And the other says, no, you know, this is just a gewalt and Jewish community really kind of, because we are all in lockdown and we are all very scared and there's a lot of threats, but anti-Semitism is anti-Semitism. There always has been anti-Semitism. There always will be anti-Semitism. And this corona pandemic hasn't changed anti-Semitism. What is your view on that?
So I think it's a little bit of a mixture of both. First of all, we've always had anti-Semitism. If you go back to the Black Plague, you know, in the Middle Ages, you had anti-Semitism. Anti-Semitism has always existed. In the modern United States, I would say over the past, you know, during this administration, there has been a surge in anti-Semitism, both on the left and on the right, and it's different. The left, the anti-Semitism tends to focus around Israel and demonizing Israel as a colonizer, and that element of the Democratic Party has emerged during the election season and since the last congressional election. On the right, there's been an encouragement of white nationalism, either overtly or just blatantly. And I think that community, you know, which has always existed in the United States, has felt emboldened. And you've had real incidents of that. You know, we're a year away from the Poway shooting in the San Diego area at a synagogue, a year and a half from the Pittsburgh shooting in a synagogue. You know, we're now basically the entire country is in lockdown. So you're seeing some incidences, but not a lot of overt instances of people organizing and taking and acts of vandalism. But you are seeing that more online. And, you know, I see, you know, when you read news reports, some of it by the news media is just reporting the facts, and some of it, you know, has a tinge of anti-Semitism. I'll give you two examples of that. One, just a few days ago, there was a funeral in Brooklyn of a well-known rabbi, and dozens, if not more, mourners showed up for the funeral, which in this case, you know, there are funerals happening every single day. In fact, I spoke to a rabbi of mine who, you know, is conducting funerals. He's like, every single day I'm conducting a funeral. And I asked him how many people are showing up at the funeral. He's like, you know, in some cases, a couple, a handful. This case in New York, so many people showed up that Mayor de Blasio went personally to the scene to disrupt it and threatened the mourners with arrest and subpoena. So, you know, is that anti-Semitic, the fact that, you know, he singled out the Jewish community and the Hasidic community and the Haredi community for this funeral? I don't think so, but I think it can be construed by some people that way. The other thing is that we now live in an age where perhaps the highest profile Orthodox Jew in the country is the president's son-in-law. And, you know, there was many stories in the media that despite lockdowns in Washington, D.C., and Maryland, and Virginia, Jared Kushner took his family to his father-in-law's resort in New Jersey to celebrate Passover. So, you know, that was mentioned throughout the media. You know, and we're in a very, very polarized time. And there's a lot of anti-immigrant sentiment. You know, I see a lot of anti-Chinese sentiment because obviously there's been a lot of news that the virus has come out of China. The president has been very vocal in his anti-Chinese rhetoric. So you're seeing a lot of anti of the other. Whenever you see that in history of the anti of the other, Jews are always, you know, going to be victims of that.
One more question about trying to kind of maybe typify the repercussions on the Jewish community is the economic realm, which again, we've all been impacted economically, all economies, and it's happened throughout the world, of course. But my question specifically regarding Jewish communities is, has the impact here also been different in a sense that government schools will return to function, you know, whenever lockdown is become more lenient or, you know, kind of dissipate? But will Jewish schools go back to the same format? What about Jewish camps? So I think here again, there could be, we're all impacted, but here again, on Jewish communities, perhaps there's a unique impact on the economic realm. Can you speak a bit more about that?
Well, I think actually in terms of the Jewish schools, they've reacted a lot quicker and in a much better way than, let's say, the public education in the United States. You know, education in the United States, you know, takes different forms. You're guaranteed a public education. So whatever city or town you live in, there are public schools. Jewish schools, especially day schools, are private schools. My kids go to Jewish day schools, and very quickly they pivoted within a matter of days to online schools. So my children are receiving online instruction from 8 in the morning until 4 in the afternoon. My friends whose children are in public schools have no online education. They're essentially given homework assignments by their teachers and asked to pass them in. So they're spending most of their days without any formal instruction. Whereas the Jewish schools have really, really stepped up. And it's been a point of pride. I think they've done an excellent job, you know, on that. Regarding the economy, I mean, you know, in the United States and probably around the world, you know, we've seen a quarter of our economy sort of collapse. So, you know, it is yet to be seen what the economic impact will be. As people's pocketbooks are affected, and most philanthropies, including foundations, their assets are invested in the market. And as the market hits, and if there is a downturn, and it depends on how long this goes on and how quickly things are going to be able to bounce back, it will have an impact on philanthropic contributions. There's no doubt about that. Regarding camps, we're sort of in a waiting period because camps have not closed yet, but they may close. And I think people are living in a time of uncertainty here.
And so is the Jewish community set up for that? For people not going to camp, for people not rocking up at school, for remote education beyond the 1 month benchmark?
Well, the Jewish community has had a lot of ingenuity in terms of trying to adapt. And I think they're already thinking about what are we going to do with kids if kids don't go back to camp and can't travel to Israel, and how do we engage them? Is there a way to engage them online? And there probably is a way to engage them. You know, we'll wait and see how this all, you know, plays out. I think we're now in this period of time of how long does this last, and when can we come out of it? And when we come out of it, are fears able to be allayed in a way that we're able to participate in society? And I don't know the answer to that.
It's interesting because it appears from, you know, from your description of where you're at, it feels like Israel is a few steps in front of where you are in terms of now dissipating lockdown measures. And can Israel help? Does Israel have a role here? And in general, does Israel have a different and added role now during this COVID-19 epidemic to help Jewish communities abroad?
So I think that Israel does have a role, you know, for the history of the relationship between the United States and Israel, generally it's been the diaspora and especially American Jewry of supporting Israel, you know, economically, philanthropically, through business ties, diplomatically, you know, through support from the United States Congress for military aid. You know, that could change around. I mean, one of the things that Israel has done during this crisis is wherever Israelis have been in need, where they've been stuck, whether it's been in Peru or other parts of the world, that they've sent planes to pick Israelis up and bring them home. You know, maybe, and I'm just speculating here, there might be a time in the future where Israel would say, listen, Jews are in trouble. You're welcome to come. We're going to come pick you up, you know, if you want to get out. I don't think we've reached that point yet, but, you know, I could potentially see that happening in the future. I do think that Israel sees itself not only as the government of the Israeli people, but the homeland for the Jewish people. And I think that they do see a responsibility. I don't think we're at that point yet. I don't think that we're at a point where suffering from governmental discrimination, you know, even though there's anti-Semitism out there, I don't think we're feeling that, you know, from governmental authorities. But maybe that's a way, you know, that Israel could be helpful. I think another way is the ingenuity in R&D coming out of Israel is so much quicker than it seems like the bureaucracy in the United States allows it to be. So, you know, as Israel develops ways to address through medicines, through potential vaccines, I mean, I would love to see an incident where the vaccine to address all of this comes out of Israel. When I come across consuls, Israeli consuls, whether it be in Boston or Los Angeles or other parts, I think they're very connected to the Jewish community. And I think they're looking at ways to be helpful.
One difficulty I'd like to ask you about in Israel's kind of outreach to Jewish communities across the world in general, but maybe in the United States even more so, is the fact that on the one hand, right, in Israel on the one end, you'll have a state with a hierarchical kind of office, if it's the Ministry of Foreign Affairs or whatever other ministry is dealing with Jewish communities across the world. We have a number of them. You will see a hierarchical structure and you'll hear one voice from Israel. On the other end, in the United States, you have a dispersed Jewish community. You have a lot of voices. You have plurality. You don't necessarily have one single leader. The communities don't speak in one unified voice. What do you say about this obstacle and how perhaps it can be overcome in improving the relations in enabling Israel to reach out more effectively to Jewish communities in the United States?
I think one thing that you're going to see that will come out of this as sort of the survival of the fittest. Not every Jewish organization will survive this. And my feeling is perhaps maybe not all of them should survive this, because if they are not really serving a purpose that the community needs, maybe they shouldn't exist. The other thing is that we did at some point have a hierarchical structure with federations in different communities sort of being the central voice for the Jewish community. I'm not sure that exists anymore. First of all, most Jews in America are extremely assimilated and probably identify more as Americans than Jewish. It doesn't mean that they deny their Judaism, Judaism isn't important to them, but I think a federated system may be less important to them. There, in some communities, there's great coordination. In other communities, there's less coordination. But I think we're seeing a time where the hierarchical structure in the United States and the Jewish community may be breaking down and may be less important these days. The other thing is that, you know, we've talked a lot about this in the foundation. I've written about this, about, you know, we live in a very, very diverse country in the United States, and we live in a diverse Jewish community. There are many elements of the Jewish community that are not reflected in the leadership of Jewish organizations. And on top of that, you have leaders of Jewish organizations, some of whom have been in their position for 30 or 40 years. So what I would recommend is a turnover in Jewish organizations, a younger leadership, a more diverse leadership. You know, in the Federation world, there's a paucity of women. I mean, half of the Jews are women in this country. There's a paucity of women who are running Jewish federations, or any Jewish organization for that matter. So there needs to be a generational shift. You need to have Jews who are excluded on the outside, Russian-speaking Jews, Israeli, American Jews, Jews with disability, Jews of color, so many different aspects that are sort of shut out from the community. You know, one of the things that as a community that we become, because these organizations rely on people to give them money, there's a lot of running after people of wealth and saying they're our leaders, but their leaders, they may have money and they may be wealthy, but they're not reflected of, you know, the diversity of the Jewish community. So that's one thing that I think, you know, may come out of this. I think more inclusion would be a better solution for a continued healthy, vibrant Jewish community. And what I see is a lot of younger Jews sort of turning off from the community, saying, you know, this community is, you know, is not my generation. It doesn't reflect me.
So Jay, this leads me to my last and final question, and it's actually a good build up to it, because I want to ask you to end off on a positive note with really trying to give us the silver lining of this pandemic and how it's hit Jewish communities in the United States. So one thing, I think very important thing that you've already mentioned, is perhaps it will egg on a kind of reorganization of Jewish philanthropy, Jewish life, Jewish communities, Jewish organizations. What else do we have to look forward to, maybe at the end of the pandemic or as we continue with dealing with the pandemic?
Well, I think one of the things is the ability to connect with each other online. I think that that's been very successful in certain communities, certainly with Jewish education. It could be very successful in terms of camping and community life. Some synagogues have been really successful in gathering on Shabbat. Of course, not Orthodox communities, but gathering on Shabbat in a virtual way. You know, one of the things that you know, we're struck with is that there's a lot of loneliness. People are at home. Some, like me, have a big family, but others are completely alone and they need to connect. So maybe, you know, the virtual connection is a way, especially for people with disabilities, which is something that we focused on, you know, disability rights and employment of people with disabilities. Now we've seen we can all really work from home and be very productive. So I think, you know, that is all a silver lining.
So I would like to thank you for everything that you do and for this interview specifically. I think it's shed a lot of light to us Israelis here about what is happening with Jewish communities on your side of the world. So thank you, Jay.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having me.
And thank you to our listeners and to our viewers. And feel free to log on for more INSS English podcasts on our website.